Hey there, you bunch of smashers. This is Sarah Milliken. Welcome to the Standard Issue podcast. In this episode, me and Standard Issue deputy editor Hannah Dunleavy had a bloody good chat with comedy icons Joe Brand and Kathy Burke. We talked about the shit show that's been 2016, perfect presents for your partner, and the optimum number of times to be called Brenda. This episode was recorded in front of a live audience at Leicester Square Theatre in London. We've got a whole bunch of these booked in with awesome guests such as Miranda Hart, Sue Perkins, Victoria Corrin Mitchell, Sandy Toksvig and loads more. January and February are all sold out, but tickets are available for the March and May shows. Go to standardissuemagazine.com/events for ticket information. Just a quick reminder to please rate, review and subscribe to all of our podcasts on iTunes, please, including previous live events and fortnightly Geek Girl Celebration Strong Female Leads. You can have a good read of our articles, news and reviews by following at Standard Issue UK on Twitter or find us on Facebook. Or you can just have a gander at standardissuemagazine.com. Everything you hear is just our opinions, so don't get het up, pets. Thanks. Right, I'll stop waffling on. Here we go. Standard Issue at the Leicester Square Theatre. You guys are so good. So, to introduce you, I'm Sarah Milliken, as you may or may not know. Thanks. This is the amazing Joe Brand.
Hello.
The wonderful Kathy Burke.
Hello.
And Standard Issue's deputy editor, Hannah Dunleavy. Who is host? Are you hosting? Are you doing the technical
Yeah, let's
stuff?
Call it that.
Yeah, okay. Crack on then, love.
Hello. So, give me. Might as well start by knowing who you guys are. So, give me a cheer if you already read Standard Issue. Exciting.
It's pretty good.
You're my favourite people.
Give us a cheer if you don't. What sounds so fucking happy about it?
Get out.
Well, now we're going to convert you fuckers. That's what tonight is about.
So I'm the lady with the questions.
Yes.
Today. So I thought I might start with, you're all exceptionally funny women. And I thought I might start with the question, no really. I might start with the question, what makes you laugh? Sarah?
Me? Start with me? Okay. What makes me laugh? Farts. mine and other people's. A well-timed fart is hard to beat. I think you'll agree. I listened to a podcast this afternoon and somebody farted on it and it just made me really happy. So if any of you could crank one out during the show, I'd be thrilled.
Shouldn't be a problem.
I had old custard last night. That's not good, is it? I think my guts might be a little bit fragrant today as well. Anyway, that's not what makes me laugh. That's what I eat when I'm desperate at 2 a.m. and I really want some custard. And my female friends make me laugh a lot. I think that's probably a really boring answer, isn't it? I should have saved the fart bit for next. But my female friends make me laugh a lot. I like to have nice lunches because then I'm eating and laughing, which is always beneficial. And I would say my husband makes me laugh. He's a comic, so he should. But he makes me laugh every day, and that is nice. So that's my... Oh, thanks. Joe?
I think what makes me laugh the most is real life slapstick and loss of dignity. And perhaps one of my favourite examples, it helps as well if you're really angry at the time as well. When I was a kid, my parents used to make us go for walks all the time. It was really shit and me and my brothers hated it. And one day we went out with my mum and dad. My dad's a very bad-tempered person, and my mum was as well quite a lot of the time. But it was quite wet, and we were walking up on the cliffs in Hastings, and we were all really... It got in a terrible mood, and my mum said, "Oh, come on, look, just smile, will you? We're out on a lovely walk." At which point, the ground beneath her gave way... And she slid about 30 foot down the side of a hill in the mud and just ended up spread-eagled at the bottom. She wasn't injured or anything, but I have never pissed myself so much in my life because all the stars are in alignment for that. So it's kind of things like that when someone tells you off and then they fall over. It's that sort of thing that I absolutely love. And ditto my friends as well. I've never laughed as much as I do with my friends, and that's great to have friends that are funny, isn't it?
Mm. It is, yes.
Kath's a friend of mine. She's fucking hilarious.
No pressure there.
I had a similar experience earlier in the year. My mum sort of slid off a cliff, and I ran to save her like a hero, and then just sort of slid past her and ended up just sitting right on the... And she was wearing a big white fluffy jumper. And so I realised it looked from a distance like I was trying to haul a sheep up a hill. And I laughed for the amount of time between her falling and then a doctor saying she had hurt a vertebrae in her back. That was the period in which I don't think I've ever laughed so much in my life.
I feel like I've let everybody down by not having a story about my mum falling down
a
hill.
Let's go push her over.
Yeah.
We can arrange that at some point in the future.
Good to know it's still possible. You know, it's still...
Can I just say, I haven't forgotten my guitar. It's just, because I don't do stand-up, they thought I wouldn't be used to holding a mic. So, but I just realised it makes me feel a bit like Mary Hopkins. You can remember that far back. But she's forgotten her guitar.
Mary, what makes you laugh?
Well, just silly things. I love slapstick as well. I love things like You've Been Framed. I've got no shame in loving that at all. Just things like that, animals falling over. I don't like it when people fall over sort of violently. That doesn't make me laugh. Like there's something going around at the moment. It's all these old age pensioners on a, what's it called, a seesaw. And then of course all the ones on the left just tumble off it, you see. But that didn't make me laugh because I just sort of started to worry about the old age pensioners breaking their hips and their heads and everything like that. But it's usually really stupid stuff. But kids, I love kids, and I haven't got any kids, which is why I love them. And so my mates' kids, I just find them hilarious. And my favourite thing, there's a wonderful documentary thing on Channel 4 at the moment called The Secret Life of 4-Year-Olds. And I just adore it, because it really makes me laugh, but I just love the beauty of them, you know. So I like a mix of smiling and joy, you know. Yeah.
Good answer. So...
Not that funny, but...
On the other hand, what makes you angry?
Everything. Hashtag menopause. Yeah. Everything. Everything is making me angry at the moment. State of the world is making me angry at the moment. When I was a kid in school, we learnt about the rise and then hopefully what I thought was the fall of fascism. To see it rear its ugly head again is making me fucking livid. I can't tell you. It's repulsive. So, there we go.
Great. Sarah? Mm.
What makes me mad? It feels like nothing compared to what Kathy's just said. But when I forget to put my bin out... really annoyed. But because then you've got, like, double shit for next time.
Well, actually, I have to say, in a sort of combination of those answers, I stayed up to watch the American election and forgot to put my bin out. And I was like, you fucker, Trump. I've got stinky old cat food now for another 2 weeks because of you, and also fascism.
And also, I get really annoyed when somebody, this is the word that my sort of, I suppose my code name for my husband, somebody... And somebody loads the dishwasher, doesn't put it on. What's the fucking point of that? And it's full. It's not like he was being good and saving space. No, it's full. So then I open it thinking it's empty, like it's finished, and now I'm going to empty it and put it all back in the cupboards, and it just stinks of bins. Because that's the kind of food that we eat. I did once eat something out of a bin, but that's it. Is that for now? Okay. Somebody went, no. Harsh. It was a croissant. See? It's better now, isn't it? Because it was a croissant. If it had just been a bread bun, you all would have thought I was disgusting. Yeah, that's kind of what makes me mad, domestic things. Passive-aggressive domestic things. Jill, what makes you mad?
Loads of things. Having to get cheese out of the bin because we've run out of it makes me quite cross. Not having any clean pants and having to wear some old ones of mine or my husband's. Both very entertaining. He makes me a bit fucked off most of the time, if I'm honest. You know, I think there's a sort of delicious anger that comes from the anger that you feel towards your partner, isn't there, really? Yeah. You know, like just the way they talk to you. You know, when you've been together ages, that they don't even bother to be nice anymore, do they? Well, I don't bother either, you know. And he kind of talks to me in, like, some kind of code, like, you know, he can't be asked to even say it in English. Like, for example, he still would quite like me to lose some weight, right? So for my last birthday, he bought me a dress that was two sizes too small. And kind of as a hint, and then gave it to me and went, oh, look forward to seeing you in it. So for his birthday, I bought him a coffin. That's how we communicate. But I am angry with him most of the time. And I think that is a relationship, really. Just the person you'd be the most angry with.
But also,
it?
You can be really angry at them and they won't go anywhere because they're really angry at you as well.
Yes,
and it's a nice sort of, it's a nice compromise, isn't it?
It is, really. Yeah. So those things, and loads of other things. Bullying makes me properly seriously angry. Mm. And I think you can just extend that to the whole world from Donald Trump downwards, can't you, really?
Hannah, what makes you angry?
Oh, so some days, most of the time, nothing. Some days, absolutely everything. Yeah, like the smallest things. Like I can fixate on something and be incredibly angry about it irrationally for ages. Like, I was really angry for ages when Coldplay put that picture from the French Revolution on the front of their album. Just completely, insanely, irrationally angry with it, to the point I would go into HMV and turn them round so people couldn't see them. But then other things, I just like, yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah. Somebody pushed in front of me in a queue today when I was at the train station and then said, oh, I think you'll find I was here first. And I thought, oh, yeah, right. We're on... perhaps it's part of... That is the new post-truth world, isn't it? That he's just taking part of there. Yeah, just made it up. So, yeah, I wanted to stab him in the face, but I didn't.
I shouted at a man at the train station the other day because I was on the phone having a private conversation just outside of the train station, but I was standing still. And there was a man doing the same, having a really loud kind of sort of businessman twatty fucking conversation. And he was walking, pacing back and forth. So every now and again, he'd get louder and louder and louder and be here. And then he'd go quiet and quiet and quiet. And then he'd come back again. And I was trying to have a private conversation. And every time he went past, I just kept saying to my husband, I'm sorry, just give us a second, because there's an asshole going past me at the moment. And he didn't listen at all, and I had to move. I really wanted to punch him, though. Why isn't punching allowed? Anyway, that's for another time. It is allowed. Oh, is it? Okay, that's cool. Okay.
Joe, you mentioned there something about clothes and pants and wearing, and I wanted to ask you, all of you, something, because you two guys in particular, I've known Sarah a while, when I was growing up and I watched television, you two were the only women that I could see on television who dressed anything like I dressed, in as much as you appeared to be wearing what you wanted to wear. Was there a certain pressure on you to dress a certain way in your career, or did you just dress how you like to dress?
Go on, Kath.
Well, I don't know. Well, it was a bit different, I suppose, with me, because I was acting. Yeah. So, you know, then I suppose, yeah, actresses are meant to be a certain way, and then when they go on chat shows and that, you're meant to, you know, apparently you're meant to have a bath and wash your hair. And yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you get offered things like a stylist. Would you like a stylist and all this business? And so I've never done anything like that, you know. So there wasn't so much pressure. There was expectation, but that sort of drifted away quite quickly. And, yeah, and then there was expectation, oh, great, you know, hopefully she's going to be looking like she just walked in from doing the shop, you know. And, yeah, so I don't know. It's weird about the pressure thing, but I just sort of ignored it, really.
Bravo.
Thank you.
I think I had pressure from weird areas, just, you know, the sort of comments people would make. I was on The Big Breakfast one day with Vanessa Feltz when she was doing On the Bed with Vanessa after poor Paulie Yates had died, and she kind of looked me up and down like I was, you know, a seriously unpalatable thing in the room. And she pointed towards this rack of, like, hideous rhinestone dresses and went, please choose anything you like from my rack. And the only thing I could think of to do with them would be, like, big, shiny sanitary towels. But so I turned down her rack and... I think on another occasion as well, I was Trini and Susanna'd, and that was quite an ordeal as well. But the thing is, like, I think with Trini and Susanna, the women that really suffered on that were the ones that were kind of nice and not gobby and couldn't talk back, you know. Because actually I'd had a hilarious thing on Trini and Susanna, because they sprung a surprise on me, and they kind of said, we've got something coming up later. And they basically sat me in a dentist chair with a very bright light shining over it. And then Susanna came on with a pair of comedy tweezers and said, oh, we've got to sort your beard out now, right? Like,
oh,
I was
God.
Fucking Brian Blessed, you know. And so I had a kind of... And I only had about two hairs. I didn't have a full-grown, you know. Anyway, so I had a bit of a rant into the camera about it. And then the cameraman went, oh... the battery's gone. I didn't catch any of that. And I thought, yeah, I bet you fucking didn't. So I kind of got quite cross about that. So cross that the executive producer was sent down. It's quite serious,
isn't
it?
That is serious, yeah.
And she said the most brilliant thing to me I've ever had said to me on telly. She said, what's the problem? I went, I'm just really angry that this, this, and this has happened. And she said, would you like to have a lie down? It's fucking brilliant, isn't it? Do you think I'm 130 years old? Like kind of Joan Collins or something, that, you know, I have a slight stroke when I get angry. And I went, no, I don't want to fucking lie down. I'm just pissed off. So weird, that attitude, though, isn't it?
It's just, when you, so you knew you were going to, when they sprung things on you, you knew about being on the programme, though. So you'd said yes to being on the programme, but they sprung things on you within that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, within it, yeah. Like sort of little kind of, you know, sneaky attempts to humiliate you and make you feel embarrassed, presumably.
It's so awful, isn't it?
Oh, it is awful, but I didn't really care. I thought it was hilarious in some ways, you know.
Did you have a lie down? Did it help?
No, sadly, I didn't have a lie down, no. I wish I had now. On top of her. And, yeah, because it was a woman, you know, which is even worse.
Oh, it's so much worse. Yeah. I've had a few people sort of attempt to do things with me, clothes-wise, and I just kind of... I don't want a stylist. I don't want some... I don't like shopping, so I do it online. So if I'm going to have a cry, I do it in the house. I did have to get cut out of a dress once in monsoon. That was awful. So I just... Then at least my husband can just cut us out of dresses now, which is nicer. It's a nice thing to do together, you know.
No, actually, just the other thing Trini and Suzanne did, they made me go to Rigby and Pella. You know, the posh
people. Oh, the Queen, that's the Queen's,
that makes
isn't
the
it?
Queen's
yeah.
bras, yeah. And they have these sort of kind of women in their 60s there with very faint Austrian accents, which is quite unsettling. And they can apparently tell how big your tits are just by looking at them, right? And they know the exact size because they're so experienced. And so I was forced to, like, they didn't film this, thank God, sort of take all, everything off my top and go into a cubicle with this strange woman. And it was brilliant because she went in there and she looked me up and down. And she went, not as bad as I'd imagined.
You could have slapped her in the face with your tits then.
A
had a swing going. I could have killed her.
That's so terrible. I'm befuddled. Yeah. Well, I feel sometimes, because I tend to dress like this, which my nephew told me was like Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory, I don't know.
Well, for the podcast listeners, it's a nice T-shirt and some jeans.
Yes.
That's what you're wearing. You made it like this, like, oh,
yeah,
but you look lovely.
But you know this, whenever we go anywhere and do anything, the first question I always send back is, will I have to wear something smart?
No, you always say, do I have to wear a skirt?
Yes.
I would never make you go somewhere where you had to wear a skirt.
No. And the second question is always, will someone touch me? But that's like something else that I'm really weird about.
Because you don't want that, or you want that?
No, because I don't want it. But yeah. But I don't. I find it quite stressful to dress smartly. I find it quite a pressure. If I could just go everywhere in my pyjama bottoms, I would quite happily. In fact, I do go quite a lot of places in my pyjama bottoms.
I got some black, just kind of jersey pyjamas from Marksies that I can walk the dog in because they just look like trousers. And I do. I mean, I have to put a top, but like, obviously I've got a jacket on as well because the boobs are just swinging everywhere. Got your pyjamas on. No. Like, you can get those pyjama tops that have got the shelf, you know, to make sure your boobs look up and you think, if I'm seeing somebody in my pyjamas, they have to see me as I fucking am. Yeah. I'm afraid.
Quite.
But I've had a few sort of... If I do a telly job, you know, I have to buy a new thing for the telly job, and then you get told quite last minute, oh, you can't wear purple or blue or black because that's the colour of the backdrop. Mm. And they just nip out and get something else. I can't nip out and get something else because there's only four shops I can fucking go in because all the rest of them stop at a size 14 and I'm not a size 14. So I find it quite stressful. So that's why I do it online, because then I can just order stuff and then, you know, try it on and you know, send it back if needs be. I find it much less stressful.
Agreed.
Thanks.
Sorry.
You're looking at me.
I was because I was going to ask you, because you did indeed get a load of crap for something you wore somewhere once, didn't you?
Oh yeah, or just the one time? Are you joking? Yeah. All the fucking time. This has been well documented, so apologies if you've heard this, but I was invited to the BAFTAs, having never been before, and I decided to go shopping with my friend, and I tried on a few dresses, and I picked one that I really liked, and we bought that one, and I felt silly when the lady on the counter said, oh, were you going somewhere nice, and I didn't want to go to the BAFTAs, because I felt silly saying that, so I just said, oh, it was a wedding, and we got in the car, and we drove home, and it was the only dress of the four that I tried on that we both went, ooh, like that, so that was a sign. And then I wore it at the BAFTAs. And the BAFTAs, once I got in the room, it was amazing because I'm surrounded by all these astonishing people who I admire. And I'd been nominated, and I knew I didn't have a cat in hell's chance, but I didn't give a shit. I was having a lovely time. Mm. And I demanded that Stephen Mangan introduce me to Matt LeBlanc. So I was having a lovely night. And I had to stand in a queue for Matt LeBlanc because there was a queue forming of people who wanted to meet him. I was behind Jon Snow. It was really weird. And... And then when I left, we got in the car to drive home and I got changed because it wasn't a driving dress. So I had to get changed. It would have got caught on the pedals. It was quite a long one. And so I was getting changed in the passenger seat because I'm classy like that while my husband was driving us home. And I just thought I'd have a look on Twitter because I like Twitter. It's fun. I like Facebook. It's fun. And it was just, it was so horrific. Just so many people saying so many horrible things about my dress. And it bothered me so much that I wrote an article, and that I was writing for the Radio Times at the time, about how unimportant it was what I was wearing and how it doesn't matter. Like, I was surrounded by all these amazing people and I wasn't at any point looking at them going, she doesn't look very good in purple, or she's too thin for that, or I don't give a shit. And it was such an odd thing to be criticised for, to me, anyway. And it meant that I've never been to an awards show since. Because I don't think I want to be valued that way, so I don't go anymore. So.
No, I've had the same thing. I don't go to award shows for that reason. I hate that big bank of photographers that...
Yeah, it's horrible on the way in.
Yeah, and those photographers, I mean, I remember reading once that when Princess Diana was alive, she was at some premiere, and one of the photographers shouted at her, hold your chin up, you fucking bitch. So if that's how they speak to royalty,
the princess
how are they going to treat
hearts.
Everyone else, you know? And I think the thing is, it's actually so many women comply with the sort of demands of the press in that way, that actually you are the odd one out if you don't, you know. And certain newspapers don't like that. The Mail hates it, you know. Like the Mail Online just has a stock set of phrases, doesn't it, about how women appear when they're at premieres. So X will put on a busty display, which I love that phrase.
Or like, if they say leggy, it means you've got legs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what, like, I actually did go to a premiere a few weeks ago because it was a really important one. It was on behalf of a charity, la la la. But when that happens, if you get something shit in the paper about you, someone always tells you about it, and then you can't avoid looking at it. So I did look. And so the Daily Mail described what I had on as billowing, right? Like I was at the head of the fucking Spanish Armada. But that's what they do with fat people, because obviously fat people can't wear something, you know, that's a tiny little... I didn't put on a busty display. They were angry. And I wasn't leggy. And I didn't have my arse out. And
were you flaunting anything? Were you flaunting anything?
Only my vagina.
Just a cutout.
I had some nice flashing lights around it, so like a little Christmas display. Now I know, but they drive you mad.
They certainly do. And while we're on award shows, I'm curious, we won an award this year, Standard Issue.
Well, hey!
And I was allowed to go and collect it, because up until that point in my life, I've been nominated for like about a dozen awards and never won one. So I was allowed to go and collect it and pretend I was Leonardo DiCaprio. All you guys have won quite a major award. You've got a BAFTA, Joe, haven't you?
I have.
You won for Nil by Mouth. Mm-hmm. Sarah won a. Was it a Perrier when it was a Perrier?
I won the Newcomer, and then I won a comedy award. The one voted by the public. So that it's good though, because that's like
they're the best ones.
Well, I think it is.
Does it actually make it
around the table? I think yeah, because having an award at all.
Yeah.
I think in the early, like when I got the Newcomer, it did, because it was sort of shorthand for you're good, I guess. So it was easier. I think it maybe opened a couple of doors that were easier to get in. But I think ultimately after that, it's nice to be nominated. And I always think nominated, because I've been nominated more than I've won. I'm bound to think nominated is more important. But it is, it feels a bit, it's nice to be on a shortlist. I'm not really bothered about winning things. Also, if I get nominated for things now, then they'll want me to go to the fucking awards too. And I don't want to. Don't make me fuck off. But yeah, I don't know if it makes a massive difference. Does it make a difference to you girls?
Well, no. Well, yeah, because I got the Cannes Award, like, so that's like 20 years ago now. And, I mean, it was very nice. The night was lovely and it was exciting and it was very unexpected. You know, I didn't expect it at all. In fact, if it's so unexpected, I wasn't there. And Gary Oldman phoned me on the Sunday morning to say, you need to come over because you're going to get the award. And they told him, because I wasn't there, so that then they could fly me over. But it was Sunday morning. I was like in my pajamas, and I really thought it was my Auntie Joan ringing up. And so it was all a bit of an hassle. But actually, it was all right. It was good fun. It was really good fun, and it was all very exciting and everything. But it sort of became, it was a bit of a bind in a way, you know? And that sounds so ungrateful. And I don't mean to be ungrateful at all. But I am being, and because it's like then you get put on a list, so then you're on a fucking list of someone that gets awards, so then you sort of get nominated for everything, or people put awards in your name. But having said that, one of my favourite awards wasn't for me. It was an Irish dancing school in Streatham named a couple after me. So there was the Capybara Cup for Irish dancing. Which,
can I still enter that?
Which I was sort of thrilled about, actually. But then, of course, they named the cup after you, so then they expect you to go and sort of present the cup, you know. I mean, they're good fun, but what it's all about is it's money. It's all about, you know, me going to Cannes to collect the award. It makes the film get the publicity that the producers want, the film or whatever it is, the DVD to promote, the show. It's all about selling tickets. That's what it boils down to. So you can sort of flatter yourself with the all the doings of it, but it's a load of old bollocks, and it's it's just to make money, really, so...
Joel, do you worry?
Yeah, I was fucking pissed off when I got a BAFTA.
Really?
I wasn't really. I was pleased, but I wasn't going to go. I tell you one thing that you can do is if you want to know whether you've won it or not, if you tell them you can't go and they go, yeah, we really want you to come, then you know you've won it. So that's quite handy.
But you're always happier for other people. Like, I was so thrilled when Joe got a BAFTA. Because it was like, it wasn't just, I didn't feel it was just for that brilliant show, Nurse. I sort of felt it was for all the work that Joe has done and all the years of comedy, you know, because you've just been someone that we all fucking adore and look up to and, you know. And it was beautiful, it was beautiful. Probably the only time I've been happy seeing someone get an award, so.
Aww. No, well, the only reason I went is because my mum wanted to go.
Of course, and, yeah.
She said, oh, let's go and we'll see, you know, who we can meet. I was like, fucking hell. Okay. And then she didn't turn up. So I had to go and I didn't want to go. So
she stood you up.
Yeah, she's always doing that. She's terrible. She's probably out graffitiing a building or something. She does that sort of thing. She's out of control, 82-year-old. Anyway... I think my favourite award I've won, which did really mean a lot to me, was an award which was voted for by the chief execs of charities as to which so-called celebrity contributes a lot towards charity, because there was a top five shortlist which I was on, as was Angelina Jolie and Davina McCall, and I won it. I was so fucking pleased.
You didn't even have to hang out with William Hague at all. You didn't even have to hang out with William Hague.
No. I chose to. No, William Hague actually got married the same day as I did. I was really pissed off about that as well.
Did you have a lot of guests in common?
Loads. Absolutely loads.
So I said something nice to you two guys earlier. I thought I might say something nice to Sarah, which is I met Sarah in... do you remember when we met? We met in a pub in Corby, because we now had to enjoy ourselves. Oh. Well, you're from Corby. Exciting. And maybe you were there. And when I met her, I went home and I said to my flatmate, I met someone today and she's going to be famous. And I knew that you were really funny and that you were on it and you were ready. And are you at all surprised to find yourself where you are now? Is it luck? Is it hard work? Is it sheer talent that's got you here?
Oh God. I don't know if I don't. Oh,
I know God. I don't often say nice things. It's
no,
thrown it's, you, isn't
you've
it?
Thrown me completely. She's normally really awful to me at work. I read a really good quote that I'm not going to remember by Peter Dinklage about luck, and it's about when people say that something's that it's luck that you are where you are. It's kind of, I should really just find the fucking quote. Does anybody know the quote I'm talking about? No? None of you. Great, thanks. Didn't do the homework I set you. It's about how the guy that was, what was that?
The harder you work, the luckier you are.
The harder you work, where are you? Give us a wave. Where are you? She's here. Hello, love. The harder you work, the luckier you are. Yeah, it's that's not the quote, but that's a good quote. Yeah. That's a good quote. And it's basically saying that if you say that somebody's where they are because of luck, it's kind of pisses all over the young new actor who's, you know, working his ass off to try and get anywhere in the early stages of his career. That's basically the gist of it. I think the lucky part of my career is that the thing that I'm good at is... I don't know what it is. I'm trying to get there. The thing that I'm good at happens to be a thing that can get you further on, can get you on the telly or can get you more work or can get you sort of, and not that you, I would necessarily want to be famous, but can get you recognition and that sort of thing. It's not that, like if I was good at stacking the dishwasher really well,
and I'm not, that wouldn't get me where I am. So I think that's the lucky thing, is the skill that I have is very useful in the job that I want. But I do think saying that something's lucky can sometimes detract from the work that people put in.
Oh, I quite agree.
If that makes sense.
No, I agree.
I think I rambled for ages, sorry.
Well, I would say there is luck involved, but there are a lot of other forces at work. And for example, and I think you're a good example here, Kath, like the odds are very much stacked in favour of people in our business, for example, who are Oxbridge graduates. Because, for example, there are, you know, the footlights, the Cambridge footlights. When they do their end of term show, agents come up from London and they sit in the audience and they select who they want to be an agent for before these people have even had a sniff of telly or anything, or an audition. Whereas if you're a kind of ordinary mortal, like I was a nurse, and there are a lot of kind of very ordinary kind of working class comics, you don't have that, and you also don't have access to the old boy network, which is the BBC and which is television, you know. And that to me makes a huge difference, and it's happening a lot at the moment, because if you look at the upper echelon of young male actors who are doing very well, most of them went to Eton and Harrow, and then most of them went to Oxford or Cambridge. And that's not luck, is it?
No.
Because the fact of the matter is there's hundreds of thousands of actors who to some extent are equally as good as each other. I mean, the good thing about comedy, I think, is they either laugh or they don't. Mm. But in your business, it's about other people's judgment. Mm. So for someone like you to break through, well, it's fucking amazing. You have had to work so
much
harder.
But I went to Oxford, Jo.
What, to the services on the M4?
Working in the little chef, yeah.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. I live in Cambridge, so yeah, it's very difficult to. And certainly, it's funny because I'm a journalist, obviously. I would be sitting in a pub with my group of journalist friends who were all living on beans because we were struggling, and behind us, someone would be announcing, "Oh, the Guardian rang me about my blog, and they've offered me a column." And absolutely,
that is really that is so really how it works. Yeah.
Kathy, do you? Is it hard work that gets you where you are? Is it talent? Is it?
No, it's a mixture of both. But I can only talk for myself, and I did work really hard in my younger years. I don't work that hard now because I think, fuck it, I deserve, you know. I'm still getting over my childhood, do you know what I mean? So, you know, I deserve a rest, quite frankly. And, yeah, no, but I always worked. I always wanted money, you know, so even as soon as I could work, I did. So I think the first job I did, I was about 9, and that was working, helping a guy out in the news agents, just sorting out all the Christmas cards and stuff like that. And then I worked in a laundrette, I worked in a bakery. This is all before, like, then realising, oh, I think I want to do acting, and I went to a great place. See, I was lucky. I went to a great place called the Anna Scher Theatre, and it catered for all kids, you know, from whatever background, because I think it was something like, I joined them when I was like 15, and it was like 20p a lesson, you know? So all you had to do was wait until your name came to the top of the list, and then you could go. You didn't have to audition or anything like that. So I was very lucky, I suppose, living in Islington, growing up in Islington, and I've not moved in. I'm not new Islington. I'm old Islington. And I was just very, very fortunate that the Anna Scher place was there, so I could go there after school. But I really did work hard, and looking back, like talking to mates that, you know, when we all knocked about together then, they did say that, you know, for some reason I was more determined than the others, really. I wasn't sort of sitting around waiting for acting jobs, because, you know, you suss out very quickly, oh my God, you work like twice a year if you're lucky. And that didn't sit well with me, because I've always been a grafter. And so I would work on the other side. I'd do stage management and I would do script reading. I was very much part of a place called the Old Red Lion back then, and that was a fringe theatre. So and that was it. And I was also very fortunate that my first professional job was with a female director called Maj Zetterling, who was a famous movie star in the 50s. She was Swedish. And she told me, I was 17 when I did my first professional job, and she said, you've got to work hard, and you've got to work harder than most, and you've got to write, you've got to direct, you've got to do other stuff, because otherwise you will just be, she used to say, the dolly in the corner. She didn't mean like dolly as in dolly. She meant dolly, you know. And she said, if you want more than that, you've got to graft. And I listened, thank goodness, I listened. And also I was quite cocky when I was young as well. I got to a point where even when I was like 21, I wasn't famous or anything like that, but I would turn down jobs. And I would turn down jobs if it was sort of, and it was inevitably the same dialogue as the last job you'd done, because I was inevitably always playing the fat mate of the lead girl. So about three times I was called Brenda. And but it was like the fourth Brenda, and it was just the same dialogue as something I'd done, you know, 2 years before. So I started to know my own worth, if you know what I mean, even though I sort of wasn't anybody and wasn't worth anything. But I kept an eye on myself, and but that took hard work, and that takes sort of courage, I think, to turn down money and stuff like that. So I'm really proud of the kid I was, actually. And I did work hard, but I was very lucky at certain points as well.
So three Brendas is the maximum amount of Brendas?
Yeah. Yeah. It was just when, you know, there were always... I did two plays in succession as well, and one was an American play and one was a Canadian play. And the American play... the character I was playing was obsessed with donuts, and then a couple of
sounds
years later,
great.
Yeah,
and I then might a couple have been in that.
but she didn't actually get to eat any donuts. That was a bollock, you see. But then I did a Canadian play, and again this character was obsessed with donuts. I think there's this thing of, you know, if you're a chubby girl, then all you're interested in is food rather than cock, you know.
But you see, if it was a ring donut, you could have made that into a game.
I could have. Or you're always a bit of a slag in things, you know. I was never sort of somebody's girlfriend in things. I was always the shag, you know, never the girlfriend. This was when I was younger, you know. So I put a stop to that as well, if I'm not having that.
So, oh, good on you.
Bravo. Good for you.
Yeah. So... what woman from history would you like to go for a pint/cup of tea with? It'd be a cup of tea with you, wouldn't it, Sarah?
It would be a cup of tea.
Who would you take?
A woman from history? Oh, God. I don't know. Oh, God, can you go to somebody else first while I have a think?
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I think the interesting thing about women in history is that... you go back to a certain point, and the only women we know anything about are either very wealthy women who had like an independent income, or royal people, or people that did something spectacular like Boadicea. So what I would like to do is I'd like to go back to medieval times, because they sound so fucking gruesome, don't they? And I'd like to ask a normal woman that just lived on a normal street who's not famous what her life was like, you know, because I don't think you get any glimpse at all of what a real woman's life was like, you know. I think one of the most fantastic things I've ever read about medieval women was it was a piece of writing, I think, by a monk saying that at certain jousting tournaments, a group of pissed women would turn up dressed as men and join in the jousting and start fights.
Let's do it.
That's what I'd like to find out about. Thank God there were still some of them around in those days. Brilliant.
No, it's true what you say about... Because I, when I did my Who Do You Think You Are, I was really hoping for a woman. I really wanted them to have found a woman that had done something brilliant, and they found me two men who were amazing. But I, there was a little when they were like, and he's called John, and I was like, nah. And the second one, they were like, he's called... Ah, oh, shit. I really wanted... And I said to the genealogist, I said, are there any stories about women? And they said, the women weren't always, like, on the census, like... They didn't always have to put their jobs down. So it was almost like you say, like there's the famous ones and then the rest are just kind of disappear. So I think I might just go jousting with Joe instead.
Agreed.
I'll go jousting, but I'll bring Michelle Obama along with us. I love her. I just think she's magnificent, absolutely magnificent. And she is. She's not from the history of the past, but she has made history. Yeah. So, yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. Actually, that links in with mine, because I am completely obsessed by Eleanor Roosevelt. Mm. And because she was an incredible woman. Yeah. And she did a lot for a lot of people. And, it gives me pause to think what the new First Lady might be like, but I'm not entirely sure it. She necessarily is quite as empowered for women as the pair of them were. But
she might get there. You never know.
Yeah,
let's
not judge her yet.
We've got to have hope, really, because there ain't no hope with him, really. I don't know.
Quite. So, I think we've got five. It's time for our last question.
I've got 10. We've got 10.
Have you got 10? Okay. Yeah, well, yeah. I thought I might ask was because I think we can all agree that 2016 has been as rotten as Byron's cock. So
is that a saying?
It is now. It is now. A friend of mine sent me a thing the other day to say that the word post-truth had become the word of the year in the Oxford English Dictionary, and he said, if you thought cunt ever had a chance, it would have been this year. but it obviously hasn't. So I was wondering if there was like a shiny example of something either that's happened to you personally or nationally that's been a good thing we could take away and say 2016 hasn't been quite as terrible as it has been. Joe?
Well, I had a terrible year personally, and there was a terrible year politically as well. Work-wise was pretty much the only decent stuff going on for me, and I think what made my year was I did this fucking massive long walk for Sport Relief. And,
yeah, she was brilliant!
It was appalling. It was appalling. And when they asked me to do it, because do you remember Peter Kay? He went round Britain on a sofa. Mm. I asked him if I could go round Britain on him. Right? And they weren't up for that. But I think actually what they wanted was, because all of the other sort of sports things they've had have been people that David Walliams was amazing, Eddie was amazing, but people that actually got properly fit and did it. And I think they wanted a kind of fat, grumpy woman going over the Pennines to inspire other fat, grumpy women, which I was only too pleased to do. And then the other thing that attracted me really to it was they said to me, you'll be burning 6,000 calories a day. Fuck me. So, anyway, unfortunately, I ate 9,000 calories a day. You know, it almost worked. It almost worked. And in many ways, it was a real experience for me because, thank God, they didn't do it in the south of England, because normally they do everything in the south of England. It was up going from Hull to Liverpool in across a huge swathe of England that is enormously impoverished, no jobs, post-industrial, everyone really fucking miserable, and who could blame them up there? It's unemployment really high. And just to go through those areas and see what brilliant senses of humour people had. We had such a bloody laugh, you know. And they were just so pleased that I'd come. And there was one estate we went through about 8 o'clock in the evening. Everyone was completely fucking pissed. And this woman came up to me to say hello, and she was she was queen of the pissed, because she was so drunk. And she went to put her arm around me and just hit me really hard around the face. And I kind of had to do celebrity smiling through it, even though it nearly killed me. But anyway, I just an amazing experience. And, you know, I hope it did inspire a few fat middle-aged women that are lazy to go for a walk, because that's what I was before I did it.
I can't follow that, really. So I won't.
Have you got one? Well, today I saw a pug dressed as Father Christmas on the tube. That was quite exciting. And people started talking about it and, like, making eye contact with each other. It was quite a moving experience. But
was that on the tube?
That was on the tube today.
People were making eye contact on the tube.
Yeah, and they were talking and they were, like, playing with the dog. And
That's a nice thing.
It was quite nice. Yeah, I don't know. It has been pretty shit, personally. It has been pretty shit politically. I agree with that. I think I had an excellent conversation with my nephew about when Ghostbusters came out, and there was all that nonsense about, the nonsense that came with Ghostbusters, and lots of 40-year-old men stamping their feet and on the internet saying, God, it's ruined this, it's done this, why would you do this, women are shit, and all of that. And I had my I've had several conversations with my nephew about
how old is he?
He's 10.
Okay.
About Kate McKinnon, who, according to him, is totally epic. Sorry, that was totally epic. It gives me great hope. And also, Sophie Scott, she writes for us, and she did a piece about when John Lewis was going to get rid of its haberdashery department, and which was just one step too much for 2016. It could just sod off. And she sent. She sent us some photographs of some things that she had made using stuff from the haberdashery department. One of them was her son's Halloween costume. And he is 10, and he had gone dressed as Kate McKinnon in Ghostbusters. And, yeah, and I think it gives me great hope to think that while 40-year-old men on the internet might be complete dicks, 10-year-old boys are wonderful. Mm.
Anything that compete with either of these things. I've had quite a shit year personally as well, and obviously the world has gone to turds. I did a nice thing. Can I tell you a nice thing I did?
Yeah.
No, we're out of time.
My mum's in a wheelchair and had sort of polio when she was 8, and she's always sort of struggled through life, and she has always resisted hearing aids, even though her hearing is pretty bad, because she said she didn't want, like, the full set. Because she wears glasses, she's in a wheelchair, she didn't want the last thing. And I think I've tried for years to convince her to get hearing aids, and she just resisted. And I totally get it. And then I realised one day when I was having lunch with her that it was because she thinks they're, like, the old-fashioned ones that are, like, quite chunky and behind your ear, and that they're visible. And it's a vanity thing, and I totally get it. She's had enough on her plate.
I have one of those.
Have you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't wear it.
Oh.
Because it looks terrible, and it's a vanity thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I totally got it. But I said to her, you know, you can get, like, teeny tiny ones now that people wouldn't even know. And then her eyes sort of lit up. And I managed, over the course of a lunch, to convince her to get hearing aids. And we went from there to, she wanted some perfume, so my dad wanted to buy her some perfume. And the lady, and I made my mum shake on it. She's quite old-fashioned in that. That means, like, that's definitely going to fucking happen now. And in at the perfume counter, the lady said to my mum if she'd like it in a bag or not. And my mum looked at me and she said, I can't hear her. And I said, exactly. And within about a fortnight, she'd had the test and she'd had the fitting, and now she has hearing aids. And it feels like I am such a cow that I will bully people until they live the way I want them to live. And it just feels like a nice thing. Of all of the shitty things, it was a nice thing that happened this year. And yeah, and I got a message today. My sister just said that she wanted to remind me of how much she loves having her hearing aids again. Wow. And it was really nice. So yeah, it's just it's a nice thing.
Now you're going to bully me into wearing my hearing aid.
Yeah, now you've said that, I am going to bully
it,
you.
But yeah. It does make the world really loud, though.
Yeah, or like normal volume, you mean.
Yeah, but it's kind of loud to me. When I first got mine, I was walking through Addenbrooke's hospital,
And I was walking along sort of the corridor and I went into the outside area and I could like hear birds singing in trees and I was like Snow White. I was like, oh, look at this. This whole world has like opened up to me. And at that moment, like two ambulances just come screaming into the bay and I was like, I don't like it.
Now that she's got them, she's got the one in each ear, she takes them out to eat crisps. And then puts them back in when she's done. Constantly sucking them, which is what she was doing before.
I think we have got time for one more, so I just thought I might ask you, if you women could do any job in the world, anything at all, no matter how crazy, I mean, Prime Minister, whatever, what would you do?
Me? You're looking at me?
Let's go with Sarah.
I did a work experience when I was maybe 14 or 15 in a veterinary hospital, because I really wanted to be like a veterinary nurse. Turns out I haven't got a very strong stomach, or didn't have then. And I'd kind of, maybe not the training to be a vet, because that feels like that's years and years and years at university. But two of my pets have been really ill recently, and the vets and the veterinary nurses have been absolutely amazing, and I think they're worth their weight in gold. So I think if I was going to retrain to do anything, I'd like to be a veterinary nurse. But it turns out I'm not very good at holding animals, really, still. I've tried it. I'm not very good at that, because my dog only the other day caught his claw on something, and the whole claw came out. Yeah, and it was at midnight on a Saturday. And so, but the vet came out, and I met her at the surgery, and she was amazing, but she said, I don't have a veterinary nurse, so you have to hold him. And it was really hard, and it was really horrible, and I thought, what an amazing job, but it would be a rewarding job, I think, as well. So maybe my stomach is stronger now, let's hope.
Agreed.
Kathy?
Well, I don't know, it's back to it's kids again, isn't it? I think I would have liked to have been like a primary school teacher, really. We've got some in, you're going, no. or, you know, nursery school or something like that. What's going on? I can't hear. I need Sarah's mum's hearing aids. Cause I don't, but, yeah, something like that, because I just think kids are hilarious. So, and the good thing happening in 2016 is, because I know a lot of young people in their sort of mid, you know, early 30s, mid 30s, they're very young to me. They're like the children I didn't have. And a clump of them are pregnant now. So that's really lovely. So I'm going to, in December, there are two coming along, one at the beginning and one at the end. So I'm really pleased about that.
Aww. That's nice.
Yeah. Hope. We need a bit of hope.
Yeah.
The primary school thing, when my kids were at primary school, I was actually asked to go and talk to a class of 5-year-olds about being a stand-up comic.
Which oh, fantastic!
Hilarious.
Brilliant!
And I said at the end, has anyone got any questions? This gorgeous little boy back again. She said, I've got a question. And I went, go on, fire away. And he goes, do you change colour when you go on stage? I said, has he found out I'm an alcoholic? I went, what do you mean? And he says, well, you're a stand-up chameleon, aren't you?
See?
Bless him.
See?
That's a joke to end on.
Exactly.
I think it is. Actually, have any of you got anything you want to plug? Anything that you've got coming up that you'd like to... You're writing at the moment.
I'm writing, but not really, so no.
And are you filming at the moment?
I'm doing a film at the moment. So I'm playing a very thin young person. And I've got lots of very thin people I know playing my fat friends, which is like really good fun. No, I'm doing a film up in Blackpool and... I'll sound like I'm boasting, so I'll stop there. Anyway, I hope it's all right.
No, you said it was in Blackpool. It doesn't sound like you're boasting.
It's not boasting.
Calm it down, eh?
All right, well, it's from a novel that I wrote, and it's about a family in which one of the members is mentally ill, has mental health problems, and it's been knocking around for 10 years. We're trying to get the finance for it, and we've finally found really wealthy Blackpool, and he's gone, oh yeah, fuck it, all right. So we're really, really pleased, and it's got a brilliant cast. It'll be out next March anyway.
my DVD comes out tomorrow. It's quite, that's quite scary. It feels quite scary. It feels like the night before. Oh, God. It makes me feel sick just thinking about it. But I'm really proud of it. And I hope you like it if you're going to buy it. Bless you. And if you've got somebody in your family who you don't really know, but they're a woman, that's what normally happens. People just go, I'm a spy for Auntie Sheila. I don't know what she'd like. Auntie Sheila likes swearing and stuff about fannies. You'd be on a winner. have you got anything you want to plug?
Well, only that if you don't want to buy Auntie Sheila Sarah's DVD, you can certainly buy memberships for Standard Issue, yeah, which helps support us and keep us going. Well, they start at £10. It'll be a nice Christmas present for your boyfriend's, no, not your boyfriend's new girlfriend, your brother's new girlfriend, well, or whatever.
Anybody
you don't know
you
what
like
to give her.
And
the neighbour that feeds your cat, whatever.
But also, if you haven't read Standard Issue, please have a look at it. StandardIssueMagazine.com. It's a no bullshit women's magazine, and we talk about everything. Hannah has some amazing columns in it. A political column that you were doing all the way through the primaries and all the way up, yep, to the election, and then you do telly columns.
I do American politics and TV, which don't seem to have much crossover, but
but she does amazing columns.
But someone's got to do it.
So please have a look at it if you get a chance, and please join me in thanking Hannah Dunleavy, Kathy Burke, Joe Brand, Maddie Regish, and Jen Hufford, and I've been Sarah Milligan. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Standard Issue in conversation with Kathy Burke, Joe Brand and me, Sarah Milliken, recorded live at Leicester Square Theatre in London. The theme music was composed and recorded by Michelle Mbioski, all rights reserved. Thanks to Maddie Hickish for press and play and record and also editing, to Jen Offord for organising the event, to all at Leicester Square Theatre, and to Joe, Kathy and Hannah for taking part. All of our podcasts are available on iTunes and directly from standardissuemagazine.com/podcasts.